grisly one.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
It must be like Putin that's the banking.
Number one with a hit in Russia, top 40 with two bullets to the back of your head if you happen to be an enemy of Vladimir the Dictator, the brutal one, Putin. But as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com to all of you, once again, yours truly, Curtis Lee, we're taking you home on the drive home at 5. And all of a sudden, the story of Russian collusion involving the Trump campaign and their ability to beat back Hillary Clinton in the general election has taken a series of twists and turns that seem to be implicating Clinton herself and the Clintonistas, Podesta, in the fact that they were using a firm to come up with negative research on Donald Trump that had ties into Russia and were paying a Brit for information that would have been very problematic to the Trump campaign. But before we go to Christopher Hahn, the liberal heartthrob and punching bag on Fox News Channel, let's listen to the president today, who is almost taking a victory lap with the release of this information as he started talking about not Uranus, which I think is occurring tomorrow. Something about Uranus. You need to check into that, Brian Mongoluch, because I'm not talking about your tuchus there. I'm talking about the planet. But instead, uranium.
The uranium sale to Russia and the way it was done, so underhanded, with tremendous amounts of money being passed, I actually think that's Watergate modern age.
Ah, and then he talked about the fake dossier that everyone had read about, that talked about when Donald Trump was visiting Moscow, agents of Vladimir Putin had hooked him up with hookers from hell who Trump wanted to give him a golden shower. This is what the president had to say about that.
I think it's very sad what they've done with this fake dossier. It was made up, and I understand they paid a tremendous amount of money, and Hillary Clinton always denied it. The Democrats always denied it. And now only because it's going to come out in a court case, they said, yes, they did it. They admitted it. And they're embarrassed by it. But I think it's a disgrace. It's just really a very, it's a very sad commentary on politics in this country.
And then the Democratic spokesperson in all of this, Brian Fallon, said, this is what campaigns are like. It involves negative research.
Campaigns engage in opposition research all the time. And my understanding of what took place was that in the spring of 2016, in April of 2016, the firm Fusion GPS, having been under contract with a Republican-aligned client during their GOP primary, made an overture to Perkins Coie, the law firm that was connected to the campaign, or our campaign, and said, hey, look, we're knee-deep in a lot of this very interesting research related to connections between Trump's businesses and Russia. And our existing client has dropped us because the Republican primary is over. Trump is emerging as the Republican nominee. But now going into the general, you might find this interesting.
Ah, so Christopher Hahn, Hillary Clinton, and Podesta said, yeah, come on in. We'll spend DNC bucks for that. Are you proud of that, Christopher Hahn?
Oh, absolutely. I just wish they would have used the research better during the campaign so they would have won the election.
You can't really believe that, Christopher.
Believe what? That the dossier is true? I think that a lot of it's true. I don't know that all of it's true. A lot of it's already been proven true.
Yeah, but
I think we should stop focusing on who paid for the dossier, Curtis, and what's true and what's false in the dossier, because that's where the interesting things lie. Of course, his political opponents paid for opposition's research. That's what campaigns do. Curtis, didn't you do that? in your Reform Party? You're not doing some opposition research?
No, we don't have enough money to do that yet, but eventually we will. But that's on the domestic front. This is dependent on foreign corporations, foreign agents, and foreign governments. In this case, this guy who used to work for Secret Service in the U.K., still a resident of the U.K., and right. Obviously Russia itself. Now, Christopher Hahn, are you saying that it's A-OK to go to the Ukraine, Uzbekistan, Russia, the U.K., to dig up dirt on a political adversary?
Well, if you're following the money and the money leads you to the Ukraine, of course you've got to follow the money to the Ukraine. You've got to follow the money into Russia. You've got to follow the money from Russia back to the United States, which has been funding this man for the last 10 years. I think that, look, Curtis, you and I live in New York City, my friend. We know this town. We understand what Donald Trump is all about. We understand he couldn't get a loan at a bank down on Wall Street anymore. We know why. So he was still having a very extravagant lifestyle and still working on projects. Where was he getting the money from?
Yeah, but you can't complain on one hand, Christopher Hahn, as Democrats have, about Russian collusion with the Trump campaign in the presidential election. And then you see collusion of this type and you just like fluff it off as if it's just dandruff on the top of your the shoulder part of your suit.
How is this collusion? They hired a research firm who hired an MI6 agent who was doing the research. I don't understand. This is not the MI6 agent fixing the voting machines in Wisconsin or changing the law in Wisconsin so people couldn't vote, which is even worse. This is an opposition research saying, hey, look, this guy spent some money over in Europe. Can you track it down?
But Fusion GPS, the company that you refer to that's at the center of this controversy, has done dirt digging for the Russian government itself. In fact, it's made a lot of rubles in that capacity. So you're talking about a geopolitical company here that'll dig up dirt for the Russians, dig up dirt for the Brits, dig up dirt for the Americans. They're mercenaries. They're Hessians. Is that the route that you want the American political process to go, Christopher Hahn?
You know what? You definitely make a point that there is definitely some issues here with the firm that did it. But that said, a lot of the things that are in that dossier have been proven true, independent of Mr. Steele.
Yeah, but you don't believe that thing about the golden shower hookers giving a golden shower to Trump in a Moscow hotel room, right, Chris?
No, you know what? I don't believe it, but, you know, you and I, again, we've lived in New York our whole life, and we've been around Mr. Trump, so...
He's a germaphobe. You know. He's a germaphobe. He'd never go for that.
Well, they didn't say he peed on him. They said they peed on the bed.
Oh, I see. Okay, that makes it different. Now, let's talk about the uranium sale that then-Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton okayed. As you know, the uranium was sold by an American company through Canada to the Russians. All of a sudden, they had possession of a sizable amount of uranium. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, the Golden Goose dropped a sizable donation from the same Russian company to the Bill's Clinton Foundation. That needs to be heavily researched because that's stinking to high holy heaven, isn't it, Chris?
Well, again, this is a trumped-up Sean Hannity claim that now Congress is going to make a congressional hearing out of. Wow, wow, wow. 2006 called. They want their Congress back.
Yeah, but every time we run into one of these stories involving Hillary as Secretary of State signing off on a deal, signing off on meeting with an ambassador or meeting with a delegation, why was it always followed by a sizable donation to the Clinton Foundation on behalf of her husband?
Well, look, I don't know and I don't care. And she's not president right now. And those questions might be why she's not president right now. But what I see right now is a Congress intent on taking out somebody who's no longer in the political system as retribution for them even running. And that is un-American, if you ask me.
By the way, you're still smarting from the hurt that the Alta Kaka put on your candidate, Bernie Sanders from Vermont, right? You're still smarting from that, aren't you, Christopher Hahn?
I'm not smarting from anything. I'm on to the next thing. I'm looking at 2018. I'm looking at 2020. And I'm trying to help America survive the next 3 years.
You know, those voter rolls where Bernie's voters were knocked off before they could vote in the primary against Hillary. You're proud of that, huh?
That didn't happen.
Oh, it happened in New York State. Are you kidding? It happened in New York City. Please. The Board of Elections has just admitted they knocked off 120,000 registered voters in Brooklyn because of Frank Setio, the crooked Democratic County machine head.
You are overstating what the Board of Elections stated. That is not what the Board of Elections
And the New York State Board of Elections also has admitted knocking off 110,000 registered voters.
Here's the thing. I will trade. I want no third-party crossovers, and I want same-day voting registration. In fact, I want everybody to be registered to vote in every state, no matter what, and only need their Social Security number to vote. You're right, Curtis. We need to make voting more accessible.
Hold on.
We need to take the shenanigans out of it.
I was ready to go most of the way with you on that, Christopher Hahn, but when you mentioned Social Security numbers and all the illegal aliens who have fake Social Security numbers, that means they could vote under your plan.
Oh, come on. We got to figure out a way to make sure they can.
Well, we'll agree on that. We'll agree on that. That's Christopher Hahn. He's a liberal heartthrob and the punching bag on the Fox News channel. When you want to see a liberal, that's the picture. Christopher Hahn.
Primus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And the drive at 5.
There are so many ways to do it.
On air. Online. On the app.
That's unbelievable.
77 WABC.
Five 25 came as a bombshell earlier today when Ken Duffy, our news guy, came into the studios here while I was doing the program earlier today, 12 to 3 with Rita Cosby, and announced that the Suffolk County DA Spada was indicted in the Eastern District, downtown Brooklyn today, for covering up a police chief's beating of a man who stole his sex toys. On the line to discuss that is a man who is hell-bent on replacing Spada as the next Suffolk County DA. He's the Republican candidate and the Reform Party candidate, Ray Perini. Thanks for joining us, Ray.
Thanks for having me, Curtis.
Now, Ray, you've worked both in the Brooklyn DA's office and out in Suffolk County in the DA's office here. Can you explain for the average person listening what this case involves against Spada?
You know, it comes down to the fact that he has been cross-endorsed, hasn't been on the ballot. His name was the only name on the ballot. So he didn't have to answer any questions. He wasn't term limited, so he thought he could do anything he wanted. Burke was his hand-picked guy. Malone and Spada hand-picked Burke to run the department. So when he commits a crime, they think they can do anything they want, that they can cover the damn thing up. And that's what you know, power corrupts. And that's the problem with what we have in this county.
Now, if I remember correctly, Ray Perini, the voters of Suffolk County voted for term limits. The candidates abided by that. But Spada rejected that and then fought it all the way up to the appellate division in Albany and was permitted to run for another four-year term. How did that happen?
Well, you know what? Here's what happened. 4 years ago, Spada should have been term limited. He brought a lawsuit in the county. It goes to a conservative judge who says, "Oh no, you can't cross it. You can't term limit the DA." So Malone, our county exec, the Democrat who and Schaefer who get Spada cross endorsed all these times, decide, "Well, we can't afford to appeal that." I'm the one who brought it up to the Court of Appeals. I had a fight to try and save what the voters did, to save term limits. The Court of Appeals ruled on policy, not on the law, because they thought the DA's race was too important. I guess I was right. It was more important that we have an election and people get to vote, because look what happened. These cross endorsements have to stop. They are terrible. They just breed corruption.
Now, Ray Perini, explain to me this. This culture of corruption in Suffolk County. You had the previous police commissioner of the Suffolk County executive, Malone Burke, who is in jail. That's what this case is about. Then you had Walsh, the Conservative Party chairman, who also was one of the jailers in the Suffolk County jail. He's just starting a two-year term for stealing money while on the job. And there's just a heavy cloud over the Malone administration, over Cindy, the police commissioner, who is running against you to become the DA as the Democrat. How do you give a political colonic to the system out there when so many of the people that I've just mentioned have had their fingers directly involved in this corruptive process?
You know what it takes? It takes an independent prosecutor. You know, my opponent, who became the police commissioner after he lost the race, was handpicked by Schaefer and Ballone. Handpicked. They don't do it. They don't do a national search. They don't do a county search. He picks his neighbor, who was never a cop, who was all but 4 years in the U.S. Attorney's Office. Newsday described him as a low-level, undistinguished federal attorney. That's who they picked to become commissioner of a 3,000-man department. And they do that so he can have a press conference a day so that they can continue to control the district attorney's office. What are they afraid of?
And then finally, Ray Perini, the big issue I've seen out there on the campaign trail, residents desperate. They need a DA who's going to do something about the growing opioid addiction problem, the fentanyl that's been introduced into the area, the cheap, plentiful supply of heroin. I know you've debated Cine on this, Ray. What is your answer to the voters who are in desperate need of some kind of solution to this escalating problem?
You got to remember, I came out from Brooklyn as the tough narcotics prosecutor when I started the Narcotics Bureau. I put major violators in jail in the 80s for 25 years to life under the Rockefeller law. Now we have a kingpin statute. Anyone who's selling that poison to our kids, I promise, if I can make them a kingpin, and it's easy, $75,000 in a six-month period, that's easy to prove. I'm going to put these guys in jail for 25 years to life. They'll learn. You come into Suffolk and sell this poison, Perini's going to make sure you don't get out of jail.
Well,
what I promise the citizens.
I got to tell you, Ray Perini, the Suffolk County political system needs a badly needed colonic. When Ken Duffy, came in the middle of the afternoon show I was doing with Rita Cosby, and broke the news that the Suffolk County DA Spoda was indicted for covering up the former police chief who's now in jail for beating a man who stole a duffel bag of his sex toys. And it was just cover up involving Ballone's office, Suffolk County executive, who's a Democrat, Cine, the police chief, who's a Democrat, now running for DA, Spoda, his assistant. You say to yourself, and this was all over a duffel bag of sex toys that was stolen from the former police chief in Suffolk County, Burke. That's why you got to come out in force and vote for Ray Perini. He's the Republican and Reform Party candidate for Suffolk County DA. If you want to help, just go online to friendsofrayperini.com.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa.
On the air, on the app. Curtis Sliwa, live.
My boy Curtis Sliwa.
Local.
There's a guy in a red hat.
On it.
Everybody listens to Curtis.
77 WABC.
We continue here on the Drive Home at 5. And if you're reading the Jersey papers today, the front page above the fold of the Star Ledger or the Record, blazing headlines as the state attorney general in Trenton, in New Jersey, coming down on the township council in Mahwah and the elected officials there, claiming it's a hateful town. The state says two ordinances were designed to discriminate against the Black Hats, the Orthodox Jews, and the Hasidim. On the line to discuss it and to break it down for us is Noam Layden. He's our news director here at WABC and hosts a morning show right before Imus in the Morning, 5 to 6, that covers a lot of these topics that we're delving into right now. Thanks for jumping back on board here on the Drive Home at 5, Noam.
Always happy to be on with you, Curtis.
Okay, so we've dealt with a number of issues involving the Orthodox, the Black Hats, the Hasidim, whether it's up in Orange County, whether it's in Rockland County, whether it's Lakewood, or now in Mahwah, Toms River. What specifically was the state attorney general charging the officials of Mahwah with?
Well, Chris Perino coming out with this lawsuit, and essentially he was saying that these two ordinances, one that was passed over the summer and one that was introduced recently, were essentially against the law. I mean, essentially they were dictated so, as in Chris Perino's opinion, to keep out Orthodox Jews who live right on the other side. If you don't know the map, Mahwah is very close to the New York state line, and on the other side of the New York state line is a Orthodox Jewish community that continues to explode in population. And so there are towns in Rockland County, Muncie, places like that, where they have huge Orthodox Jewish populations, but they're too big. And so now you have this shift where some the Orthodox population is looking at towns in New Jersey. And one of the towns that is right in their eyesight, not too far away, 5-7 miles away from Muncie, is Mahwah. And what people in Mahwah have seen over the last couple years is people in, you know, what are obviously Orthodox Jews in long black clothing, black hats, black suits, women in very modest clothing, using parks in Mahwah. And in a town like Mahwah that is not used to seeing an Orthodox Jewish population, they don't like that. Or a lot of people don't like that, and they think they're worried that this population that has taken over towns like Muncie might take over their town as well.
Yeah, but no, a public park is a public park. Anybody can use it. A homeless person can use it. A transient can use it. Damn Canadian geese, Canada goose come in, those invaders from up north, and they poop all over the park there in Mahwah. Why was there an ordinance trying to restrict the use of public parks and recreational facilities to the black hats, to the Orthodox and the Hasidics?
Well, of course, the people in Mahwah will say it wasn't aimed at them, but the ordinance that they put in for parks in Mahwah said out-of-state residents would not be able to use the parks in Mahwah. So all those people who are coming from places like Muncie on the other side of the New York state line in New York are out of state. So essentially it says they can't use the park. And so what Chris Perino is accusing these Mahwah lawmakers and the people of Mahwah of doing is saying, essentially you're saying Jews can't use the park, and that's against the law. And then in his complaint, he goes on, I mean, and he quotes some of the things that were said in town meetings that are clearly anti-Semitic. Some of the things that I don't want, I can quote some of the quotes, some of them I don't want, these rude, nasty, dirty people who think they can do whatever they want in my nice town. These are things that were said in public forums. Another one, I don't want my town to be gross and infested with these nasty people. And Perino cited that, so, and a whole lot more, by the way, a whole lot more quotes saying, essentially, this was anti-Semitic, this was a move to keep Jews out of Mahwah. That was the first of one of two ordinances.
Now, I notice on the second ordinance, the last time we had you on board, you discussed this, how observant Jews will put their, an identification up on utility poles or a boundary line. Could you explain what that whole thing is?
Sure. So on the Sabbath, Orthodox Jews can't carry things like keys. It's against the Sabbath to push like a stroller. And so what they've done is they've created these communities where then it's you can do it. You can still observe the Sabbath and push a stroller or carry the keys. And one of the way they do this to create a boundary that creates this community is put up this PVC piping, little pieces of piping on telephone poles that essentially circle the entire town. And once all that piping is up, then it's essentially kosher for people to carry keys and push strollers. And so what the beginnings of a Jewish community was doing in Mahwah, they had made a deal with the town, with the utility companies that own those telephone poles, and said, we're going to start doing this. And they've done this in many towns in New York City. There's some in many towns in New Jersey, many towns in New York. There are already A-roofs, what they're called, A-roofs up. And they successfully had petitioned the town to do this, and they were putting the piping up, and what happened is people in town saw what was happening, and some of them physically were pulling the PVC piping down themselves. Others were going to the town board and saying, hey, you need to introduce a bill that says you can't put up anything on telephone poles. They already had something on the books that said you couldn't put signs up, like, you know, a yard sale sign or a sign for a store on a telephone pole. And recently what they did is they introduced this bill that would then say you couldn't put PVC piping up on telephone poles.
That A-roof that you've described, does that mean inside that area that's covered by the A-roofs, that's Hashem. That's a Hashem area. Outside of it, it's JC. It's exactly. Gentile land.
Right. In other words, if you're outside of that, essentially that community, then no, you can't carry something or push something on the Sabbath. So they have that. You know, New York City has a huge A-roof. Manhattan has a big A-roof around it. You wouldn't notice, but there is one. So people can carry and push things in Manhattan.
All right. Now, the other thing that in a lot of these communities people have been kvetching about and not quelling about it at all is that the black hats, the Orthodox, will show up at their house.
Right.
With a satchel full of shekels.
Right.
Cash in a suitcase. And say, ma'am, I want to buy your house. I'm prepared to give you $850,000 in cash. We don't need to go, you know, to the bank. You get all the money right here. We transact the paperwork, and the house is mine. Is that one of the complaints of the residents of Mahwah, like we've seen in other communities?
Yeah, in other communities, they've actually created no-knock laws because of this, essentially saying that you can't come in. You can't knock on the door. If someone has a sign up on their door, you can't come and knock on their door. But, that's what's happening. It's in these communities, again, it's an exploding, it's one of the fastest-growing populations in North America is the Orthodox Jewish community. And so they need a place to go.
Wow.
And essentially what they're doing now is knocking on people's doors and saying, hey, right, I'll give you cash on the spot for your house.
No, let me tell you something. Whether it's Chinese, Russians, or the Orthodox, if they're going to show up with a satchel full of shekels, rubles, euros, man, there are a lot of people out there who would sell their house to them in a heartbeat.
Deep connections, deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
77 WABC.
We continue here on the Drive Home at 5. It's the fifth anniversary of when Superstorm Sandy smashed into our shores. A lot of people have still not been made whole in that interim period. And our field reporter, Jerry Barmash, gives us an update on everything that's taken place since Superstorm Sandy smashed us to smithereens.
It's a 77 WABC News special report. Sandy, 5 years later.
The name Sandy still elicits shivers for families from Breezy Point to Babylon and Freeport to Fire Island. This weekend is the five-year mark since she crashed ashore, causing property damage and mental anguish. For too many, they are still waiting to rebuild. Others, like 96-year-old Philip Cassiopo, the long process is finally near completion.
I might be there one of these Christmases. If I make it.
His contractor, Michael Aiello from Bayville, hopes to get him home by year's end.
I want him in there before the snow starts falling.
For now, Cassiopo and his ailing wife, along with their son, live in a trailer adjacent to their raised Belmore home. Despite the bureaucratic delays, waiting for funds to finally rebuild, he's taking it in stride, saying his situation is not unique. The main difference, though, staying in the bulky rental and also forging a good relationship with his contractor.
I was lucky to get this gent here. He's done a wonderful job.
Aiello, in business for 25 years, is working concurrently at five homes. He says the amount of paperwork is unfair for homeowners, especially in their 90s.
It's just a whole bunch of permits that you need to get this thing rolling. And once you actually get all the permits, the job is pretty easy.
Right.
Until you get through all this red tape. It's a three-year process.
The home, lifted 7 feet, is a familiar-looking scene on the South Shore. But at ground level, workers are shoveling large amounts of dirt as they prepare for plumbing. Of course, most homeowners have nothing but nightmare stories since Sandy, with contractor issues one of the big problems. Just ask Margaret Bonsignor from Baldwin Harbor, who paid $200,000, was on target to finish renovations in 6 weeks. Then it came to a screeching halt.
There was no electric. There was no plumbing. There was the first floor needed to be rebuilt. None of my windows opened. He broke every one of my windows. They don't open. I didn't have a heating system in. I didn't have the bathroom in. I didn't have the staircase up to the second floor.
Plus, the guy putting pilings in the ground for lifting the house stopped showing up when the contractor was $75,000 in arrears with him. She claims the contractor opened a second Suffolk business after losing his Nassau license the week before. This Babylon Village homeowner is another going the legal route with his contractor.
He's saying that we owe him $150,000 or $140,000, and we're saying that we don't even owe him $20,000.
But he is out $75,000 for having to redo his contractor's poor work. Aiello says homeowners, though, need to take some blame for not doing their due diligence.
The sooner they give the people the money, the sooner they'll be back in their house, and they don't even take the time to find out if they're a legit company or check the background.
Another business stood out for its decent relationship with neighbors in the aftermath of Sandy. We'll look at that tomorrow. in Nassau County. Jerry Barmash, WABC News.
5 years after Superstorm Sandy just totally rearranged our terrain, and still, there are a lot of people who have not been made whole. You imagine what this holds in store for people in Florida and in Texas and Louisiana and Puerto Rico who were smashed to smithereens by their own hurricanes recently.